everybody. Welcome back to Shannon's Lumber Industry Update. It's episode 120, and I'm going to call this a legacy of wood. This is a conversation that I'm hoping will inspire others. I'm hoping will inspire local woodworking guilds, sawmill owners, individuals to educate themselves and to take action. In short, what I'm going to talk about today with my guest is how to build a legacy of wood with a kind of a bent towards sustainability and what that actually means. I think as wood users, consumers, builders, sawyers, it's up to us to foster further education about what sustainability in wood actually means and how we can build a legacy for the future, a legacy as current wood users now can build upon for future generations. That's all I'm going to say about that, because I think we've covered it all in my conversation today with my guest. I want to have kind of a different conversation here. I have Shane Breitsky with us on the show. Shane is the president of the Mid-Michigan Woodworkers Guild. And honestly, every now and then I drop into Facebook and I poach conversations. There's all kinds of conversations about wood. And Shane posted something, I believe, in the Wood Whisperer Guild group.
Yeah.
About kind of giving back. I'm just going to leave it that way, with kind of a tinge of sustainability there. So first of all, welcome to the show, Shane. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was surprised because I just tried to tag you in that Facebook post, and then suddenly you're like, hey, let's have a conversation about this. So looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't even remember now. I think I actually saved it somewhere, but knowing Facebook, I'll never find it ever again. But yeah, it was showed up my notifications, and I'm always curious, just, you know, forgetting about running this podcast, just as somebody who works in the industry in marketing, I just like to know what perceptions are out there. So Shane, can you kind of give us a recap of your original post and kind of what the gist of what you were asking?
Yeah, so I was trying to keep it fairly open-ended just so that my ideas don't become, you know, influences on what direction you might take it. And so as president of the guild, I'm sometimes thinking about long-term legacy, that next generation of woodworkers. And so with that, you got to start thinking about sustainability. And so I tried to ask you about essentially the same sustainability question of hardwood forests or any other direction you wanted to take it. And that's and that's kind of where I left it. Then suddenly I'm on this show.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is, careful what you post on Facebook. Podcasters are listening.
No, I'm excited to be here.
I mean, it's fun, and I've actually got a bunch of feelers out for like state foresters and actual experts and officials, and I think that will be interesting. But ultimately, all of this sustainability it needs to be a grassroots effort. And we have these woodworking guilds, we have these clubs, call them what you will, and we have them in virtual format. I mean, you were posting in a virtual woodworking guild Facebook group. That's just as active, actually, frankly, more active than a lot of the brick and mortar woodworking guilds that I know of. And we have to kind of start at that level. And ultimately, I guarantee you, because I've got a forester from Michigan and one from Connecticut that have already kind of tentatively said I'll come on the show. But I guarantee you what they're going to say is, we need your help. Like, we need the average Joe citizen's help. And if you go on any state forestry website, there are so many opportunities to volunteer, because these people have no money. Yes, they're state funded, but like, there's so many other things further up the chain that are getting more money. And I don't know whether this is true anymore. I remember when I was in college, the park ranger was the lowest paid job in the country.
Oh, wow.
So I doubt that that's changed dramatically when you consider how much funding these people have. So long story short, I think it's important that you and I, average Joes, have this conversation. So what do we do to build a legacy? What do we do to kind of give back in some respects? So first things first, tell me a little bit about the Mid-Michigan Woodworkers Guild. Well, who are you guys? What are you known for? What's your membership like?
Yeah. We meet here in mid-Michigan, more specifically it's a kind of the capital area. So we're in the Lansing mm-hmm. area. We meet in a small town called DeWitt, Michigan, and we meet in person every third Tuesday, and it's monthly. And I'd say we're a fairly active group. We've got 115 active members. That means, you know, they pay their dues, and we've got a bunch that haven't yet, but that's, you know, that's a story for another day. but yeah, I've been privileged to serve them since 2020 as president. I walked into the pandemic essentially. So that was a whole,
nice.
Yeah, that was a whole can of worms I didn't know I was going to be having. But you know, things are starting to pick back up. We really enjoy getting together. We even have a monthly Zoom meeting where we talk shop. It's called that. Let's mm-hmm. talk shop. And we also have, we're trying to get more and more shop get-togethers where people are building stuff. We have active members in our community creating wooden toys and boxes and other sorts to give back, you know, to people in need or who can't afford toys. It's a really good group of woodworkers, and it ranges. And one of the most popular questions is, can I be part of it? If you're interested in woodworking, you can be part of it. There's students that have never used a bandsaw before to the seasoned veteran that's installed I don't know how many cabinets. It's a broad range, and we're welcoming to all who are interested.
That's great. And I think I'm glad that you brought up like the toy making and box making. It seems like just about every guild that I have either been a member of or I've spoken to over the years has some sort of philanthropic thing, a lot of toy making, a lot of box making, a lot of kind of giving back. And I think that philanthropy is kind of the great place to start. There's an opportunity there to educate as a bunch of woodworkers. There's also an opportunity to fundraise. So I talked earlier about organizations. Let's just grab, say you want to, you know, let's help our forest. Let's build a legacy of having hardwoods available for future woodworkers. So you can use some of that philanthropy to actually raise money and then donate it to somebody like Releaf Michigan, you know, mm-hmm. one of the big tree planting organizations, or like the Michigan Botanical Club, or what's the other one? Hold on. Let me pull up the right Google panel. MI Trees, Michigan Trees, which I believe is a subset of the 10,000 Tree Initiative. But long story short, you can go to Google and try, like, I typed in Michigan tree planting programs, and boom, like bunches of things come up. And at every single one of these websites, there is an opportunity there to donate, just like you would expect of any nonprofit. But then there's also an opportunity there to donate your time. And what's interesting, I looked at, I believe it was Releaf Michigan, and then I looked at one of the state of Michigan sites. There were, there's a volunteer form in there that allows you to even segment what you want to do. You can join, you know, a crew of people going out and planting trees, which actually sounds like a lot of fun, and a lot of woodworkers might be into that. But you can also donate like clerical time. You know, we need people to literally stuff envelopes. You can donate time from an education perspective. If you wanted to be a part of outreach programs to schools or something like that, they're looking for people there. Then there's also the ability to donate services in kind. And offline, Shane, you and I talked about how several of your guild members actually own bandsaw mills, wood misers, whatever. And there is an opportunity there to use that saw to help some of these organizations deal with the trees that they do have to take down. Because that's one of the things about a lot of these companies. Their headline is we plant trees, but there's also a fair amount of cleanup and grooming that they do. And especially if you tap into the state of Michigan, there are opportunities to donate saw time, because we have these trees, and if we don't have somebody who can put them to work, we're just going to chip them, you know, or we're going to put them in a landfill. So, you know, that could be viewed as donating, but it also could be viewed as, hey, free tree.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on how you look at it. So your group specifically has the resources to actually turn logs into lumber. And I think that that's something that you could probably heavily lead with. Have you guys ever done any kind of tree planting initiative or, you know, weekend or whatever with any of these groups?
Not that I'm aware of, but this group's been a lot around about my entire life. They got founded sometime in the early 90s. So they may have in the past, but we haven't in several years. So that's why I was just trying to look into different things and look for a step in the door.
Yeah. One of the things that I would actually suggest is a good starting point, and think of this as you know, I'll put on my marketing hat now, but think of this as a longer campaign. I would actually reach out to the state of Michigan Forestry Department. And there actually is, the state of Michigan has an urban forestry department. And there's actually the name, email, and phone number of the director. I found it yesterday and I don't have that page up anymore, but it wasn't particularly hard to find. If necessary, I can send you the link offline. But reach out to that individual and get either that person or someone within the department to come and speak to the guild guest speaker about what the current forestry initiatives are. And what I think is interesting, I've actually spent a fair bit of time in Michigan. In fact, Hand Tool School members will remember that I have a series of videos of me standing in various forests in like the top of the mitten, grayling and north. I was in Frankenmuth one night, grayling the next, standing in the middle of forests. And I did a bunch of videos on silviculture up that way. And there is so much forestry going on in Michigan right now. Mm-hmm. And what I find is particularly cool about Michigan in particular is how the environmentalists and the foresters, the lumbermen, are working very much in lockstep with one another. And there's a lot of synergy between those two at face value kind of warring parties. And there's been a lot of education to understand that, you know, as woodworkers, cutting down trees is not a bad thing. Like, don't be ashamed of this. And it's funny because I'm thinking about your original Facebook post, and I think you put it as you tried to leave it open-ended, but it's also the typical social media thing. You try to be as unthreatening and unoffensive as possible because someone's going to take offense no matter what you say. When you start talking about environmental issues, people immediately, it turns into a political war. But I think fostering better education about how cutting down trees, like, we're woodworkers, we use trees, we cut logs into lumber. The answer is not necessarily just plant more trees. The answer sometimes can be plant the right trees. It sometimes can be, let's clean up the forests, let's remove some trees, let's, you know, certainly the dead standing and the trees that are already fallen through, you know, storms or whether they've died or whatever. Let's go out and clean up the undergrowth. There's lots of forest care that needs to go on that could be, in my mind, could be a phenomenal opportunity to spend a day outside, a day out in the forest, but also to learn a hell of a lot. Because, you know, they're not just going to send random people out with, you know, a bunch of saplings. They send you out with a crew of certified foresters and they tell you, here's how we need to plant it. And what's interesting in Michigan, especially in your neck of the woods in Michigan, is there is a lot of managed land for many, many different purposes. There's a lot of softwoods growing up that way. Mm-hmm. Go up into northeast of you up to like Hartwick Pines State Park. And that's pretty much all softwoods. Now, they do have some old growth forest and they've got a protected section of old growth up there. But what's interesting is how they're managing the old growth hardwoods in that protected area. The solution is not just leave it alone, don't ever touch it. There's active, not, I hate to say active logging, but there is selective logging in order to protect that forest and to continue to grow that forest appropriately. But then all around that, you've got acres of land that are one whole section is clear cut. And you think, oh my God, clear cut, terrible, bad, you know, that's so awful. But understanding why they're doing that and what they're planning to grow there and why that is the best silvicultural plan for that particular area for the product they're making. Hartwick Pines is a good example because I have some personal experience up there. There are all kinds of educational seminars that they give up there. So that's another one. I would reach out to them and say, hey, can you come down? You know, it's not that far, but there's probably any number of state forests closer to the DeWitt area to Lansing. Hell, you've got Michigan State.
Yeah.
Right there. They're in Lansing, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. They're in East Lansing. So it's just 20 minutes from where we meet.
Yeah. So there, I guarantee you there's a forestry department. Every Michigan college has a forestry department.
They've got some cool programs, actually. They've got a wood miser on site, and they're teaching their students how to use it and how to, the downed trees from campus, they're turning into, product, and they're selling it to keep their program going. It's actually, they have a pretty cool stuff.
Actually, I have a contact there because listeners of the show, remember I had UVA on, University of Virginia, and their sawmill, the same program they're doing. And at the time we were talking about other universities who were doing it. And that spawned several people reaching out to me from Ann Arbor, also, MSU. And then of course the folks up at Marquette, up in the UP.
Yeah.
Michigan's kind of at a forefront when it comes to forestry in a lot of instances, because there is an enormous commercial industry up there that's been there for centuries, and a commercial industry that recognizes that we did a very bad job 100 years ago. Mm. And it's really cool to see how they have understood that, admitted to it, and said, okay, we're done apologizing. Now we're doing it right. And the health of the forests, and this is Michigan, but over into Wisconsin, Minnesota, that whole north central area of the United States and into Canada, massive amount of forest products coming from that area. And it wouldn't be coming from there if it wasn't managed properly. And it's really very interesting to see how it's turned around. And the quality of the material that's coming out of there. I mean, some of the best maple in the country comes from the Upper Peninsula.
Oh, yeah.
Also, a lot of bird's eye comes from the Upper Peninsula uniquely. So, yeah, that would be the first step in this campaign. We want to build a legacy. We want to educate our members on what sustainability actually means, and not just from the purely environmental. Like, let's leave everything alone.
Mm-hmm. That's what we were kind of
get out of nature's way.
Yeah, you read through the subscript of what I was getting at on that post.
Yeah. Well, and the important part, and for that matter, let's get a state forester in. Let's get somebody from Michigan State in, or something like that. Heck, let's get somebody from Ann Arbor in at the same time and see if sparks fly in between them. Work that out. I don't know about you, but do Ann Arbor, do the Wolverines and the Spartans really have that big of a rivalry, or is it just turned into that?
Yeah, okay. It's so I'm an import to Michigan. I've lived here for about 6 or 7 years now, and it was shocking to me how much of a disagreement there is between the two.
How interesting. Because I graduated from University of Colorado, and the Colorado State and University of Colorado rivalry, and I'm putting that in air quotes, when I was at school, we never played. We were in totally different conferences. We paid no attention to one another. We partied with them, for God's sake. And then after I left, they used to play. They reinstated it, and they put it at Mile High Stadium, and they turned into this huge, the Mile High Showdown. And people are like, oh my God, the big rival. We're like, what are you talking about? We couldn't care less what's going on at CSU. And CSU is like, what? I don't know. Who cares? And for the longest time, it was who cares? Because CU is just going to beat CSU anyway, But
yeah,
I always thought that was funny. These interstate rivalries that don't actually exist.
But yeah, there's definitely some, but it's not some of the SEC rivalries, I don't think, but that's just my perception of it. Cause I also don't care.
Well, the SEC rivalries is every other conference versus the SEC.
Yeah,
none of us want the SEC to win. So, yeah. Anyway, somehow we end up on the NCAA here. But I do think getting a forester in, but then seeing if you can get one of these Releaf Michigan type people. People. That sounded so awful. That sounded like, oh my God, people are going to, what do you mean, you people? One of these environmentalist types, let's get them in, because I really think it's important to reach out to them and say, look, we're woodworkers. We're not wood butchers. We really want to understand how we can give back. And is it as simple as, I made this piece of furniture, let's plant a tree. Maybe it is, And I think that would be frankly, me personally, I would find that fascinating. If my local guild were to bring in a state forester, I'd be there in a second. If they were to bring in somebody from an environmental organization to actually talk about the facts, let's talk about the numbers. Because I think for me, working in the lumber industry, certainly I'm biased. I try to be as open-minded as possible about a lot of this stuff, but I still firmly believe the lumber industry cares a great deal about the health of our forests for, frankly, economic reasons. You know, call it, and maybe that's a, you know, people will find that to be a bad thing, but this is our product. And if we don't take care of our product, we're not going to have any more product. And this is where, you know, the huge evil empires of Weyerhaeuser and, General Paper, the International Paper Company, these big companies that get vilified, but they have pretty phenomenal silvicultural programs within them because they recognized that we did it bad. Like, and suddenly we were out of material and we had no near inventory. We had no long-term inventory, but I think it would be really educational and a great first step to educate just your guild, educate your people. Mm-hmm. And ideally to be able to turn that around and pay it back and, you know, turn it into an outreach program where you can go to local fairs, craft fairs, you can go to schools and you can talk about what forestry means and what, you know, what it means to take care of the forest. And I think really start to share some of the amazing numbers coming out of the state of Michigan Forestry Department about the health of the forest today as compared to 50 years ago, because they're amazing. Like the number of trees and the size of the inventory, and unfortunately that's the only way to put it. It sounds kind of crass, but the available trees is so much higher today. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it's hundreds of a percent better today than it was 50 years ago.
Oh, wow.
100 years ago, those numbers have got to be astronomical because what they've done is understood the product. What does the world, but you know, the nation more importantly, what does the lumber industry need from the state of Michigan, from our forests? What do they historically need from us? And what are we providing today? And how do we grow a better product? How do we grow a faster turnaround? How do we grow a healthier forest? And I spoke about this with the Completely Arbitrary guys, some episode ago, about the synergy between the forest guys, the guys cutting down the trees, the actual lumberjacks, the foresters who are responsible for growing the trees, and the animal people, the ornithologists, the entomologists, all the people concerned about the fauna in the forest. Mm-hmm. And the jackpine warbler specifically was nearly extinct up at Hartwick Pines in that area. And that was because we were leaving the forests alone and the jackpines were dropping their lower branches at about 2 years old, which was the nesting habitat for the jackpine or the Kirtland's warbler. Suddenly there was exposed bases to the trees. There was no nesting habitat for these birds anymore. And they very closely came extinct. They were almost gone. And today it's noted, the Audubon Society notes it as the single greatest turnaround for a species in the history, you know, of anybody paying attention. I don't know what the numbers or anything, but put it this way, my wife wanted to go on a birding trip to look for the jackpine warbler. It took us all of about 5 minutes. It wasn't hard to find. They're everywhere. Now they're in a very, you know, small area. It's funny. If you look at a birding map, you'll see like way up in northern Canada and then this little tiny blotch in middle of Michigan. Like,
oh, that's funny.
Like, what the heck? But they are everywhere. Like, you know, 9 out of 10 birds is a Kirtland's warbler. And it's because the ornithologists and the foresters kind of sat down and compared notes and said, holy crap, like we can not only harvest more trees, but we can increase the habitat for this bird that's nearly extinct. Because they weren't cutting down the trees, or more importantly, they weren't planting, they weren't clear cutting and broadcast seeding to allow that like dense all the way to the ground growth that provided the nesting habitat. They were leaving the trees alone. They were letting them grow up and be taller. And they were, you know, still harvesting them for a variety of purposes. So instead of building a set of land, you know, 10, 20, 100 acres of land dedicated to shorter tree products, which mostly end up being pulp products, they were letting them all grow, and they were getting 2x4s, 2x6s, some traditional lumber out of it, but then they were also getting pulp products from the same trees, which was completely ridiculous because there's no reason to cut down a six-year-old tree for pulp. What a waste. You know, you can cut down a one-year-old tree, or you can thin a bunch of one-year-old trees for pulp products and let the remaining trees grow even better and stronger to make a better 2x6, a better 2x8. This was the kind of nobody was talking to each other. And when they finally sat down and the animal people, the animal environmentalists and the tree environmentalists, and then the industry people sat down and compared notes, they realized, hey, we're all on the same side. Go figure. Let's make this work. And that's the exciting part about, you know, the health of the Michigan forest today. And, you know, for people listening to this going, you know, they're talking about Michigan, this same thing can be said in a lot of areas in the country. And especially in places like Canada, where you've got huge amounts of Douglas fir and Western red cedar being harvested. It's the same type of story up there. We've kind of figured it out. It doesn't mean that there's not still bad stuff happening. There's still irresponsible logging happening. And actually, there's probably more irresponsible logging happening within the borders of our country than there is in places that people really pay attention to, like the Amazon rainforest. That's a whole other conversation, but like, we don't have nearly the regulations, nor the oversight, nor the chain of custody line of sight within the borders of the United States that they do in places like Brazil and Paraguay and, you know, all across Africa and into Southeast Asia. Because there has been so much spotlight shined on these tropical regions for possible deforestation that all of these outside parties like the European Union, the United States, have stepped in and modernized and given our two cents, basically. And we're not practicing what we preach, which is kind of difficult. So yeah, I'm going to go off on a slightly political tangent, but I don't stop now. I have to be cautious about that. But all this to say, there's your education opportunity.
Absolutely.
And I think, first of all, how fascinating for your guild. Second of all, you know, the more education we can have on this kind of proper silvicultural practice, I think the better. Then you can turn that around to outreach. Then you can reach back to these companies and say, okay, now we want to go plant some trees. And you can have conversations with like the urban forestry department and talk about, well, what are the right trees? And do some education on the planting that needs to go on there. And that could be really kind of fascinating. Now that you have members that have band mills, you could begin to do, certainly there's a certain amount of outreach that can be done there, but let's be real. This is very hard to do with school kids because it's a screaming bandsaw mill and you can't really like, you can't have a conversation while it's running. Cutting logs is not a super fast thing. There's a reason why every Instagram post is sped up. Like, forget about the Alaskan mills. It's slow. So, you know, unless you have a highly interested shop class, which is possible, even then, it's not a very exciting demonstration. So it could be a little bit hard to do. If you're talking younger kids, which I've had great experience teaching hand tools to middle schoolers, but they get bored fast, you know, and unless you're building something really fast, you lose them. So it's a possibility, and that's the immediate knee-jerk reaction. Let's do outreach to schools. I think that's cool, but I think you've got to really think about what your presentation is, and you probably need to have a lot of build it like a cooking show, you know, where the turkey's already in the oven and you can prepare it and then pull another one out of the oven. I think you're going to have a lot of that kind of staged, you know, material so that you can keep the kids interested. But being able to show that life cycle of how, you know, how a tree is grown, how it's harvested, and what it's turned into. Here can be a trade education on actual woodworking and how it's a circular thing, you know, and if as a woodworker, you're aware where your trees are coming from and you as a woodworker are participating in tree planting and putting stuff back when it's being taken down or being very cautious about what's being taken down. You know, I'm not just going to go out and grab a random tree. I find a tree that I like because I want to build, you know, a chair. And you find that tree, but then you look around and you say, okay, well, are there any other seed trees around this? What's going to happen if I poke a hole in the canopy when I take this tree out? That could be a good thing. It could be a bad thing. And that type of knowledge, which could come from booking these forester people to come in to talk to your guild, could then be turned around. And if what could be really cool is like you could then take the kids like out into the forest. You know, if they did this as a field trip or they came to a band mill and then you could actually walk into the forest and actually show them. I do have some experience with this. That's a lot of fun because, of course, they're like, we're outside. We get to go into the woods. They love it. But being able to like point to a tree and say, first of all, this is a white ash tree. Second of all, if I cut this tree down, what's going to happen? And get the kids talking about like, well, there's going to be a big empty spot there. Well, is there going to be more sunlight? And they look up into the canopy and they can see how big the canopy of that ash tree is. And they can start to see, yeah, there's going to be a lot more sunlight. Well, what do you think is going to happen with that more sunlight? You know, well, more things will grow. Well, what specifically? You know, and you start to have that kind of guided conversation. It's actually a lot of fun. And if you could tell by the cadence of my voice here, it is a lot of fun. It's really exciting to have these conversations. I've been very fortunate that my wife is a teacher and I'm kind of hooked into the education system already that I've been able to do this a lot. I did this a lot when I was volunteering at a living history museum nearby as well. It's really cool because the kids walk away. And what I found really exciting was the chaperones were like, I didn't know any of this stuff. This is really cool. I'm going to go home and tell my kids this stuff. So it can be a really, really cool thing and a great way to kind of, to quote you, to build a legacy of understanding and certainly build some future woodworkers.
Yeah, absolutely.
How am I doing here? Am I kind of hitting the mark of kind of what you were thinking?
Oh, yeah, sure. I was just looking for any and all ideas, and these are all fantastic. It's one of those things that's almost as if even if you just pick one, it's not like you're picking the wrong pony. You're making a difference.
And that's why I like the idea of thinking of it in terms of a campaign.
Yeah.
This is a multi-step thing. You know, everything is going to build on one another. So I think, and a lot of this is education. It's going to be educating the guild, but it's going to be helping to educate others. Let's talk some tangible stuff. Certainly, planting trees. You know, and by the way, folks, those of you who are using Google Chrome as a browser, I highly recommend, there's a little like beaker in the upper right corner of your browser. It's the lab icon, search lab icon. I highly recommend just clicking into that and activating Google's new generative AI search tool. This is something, sorry, I'm gonna guff on a digital marketing thing. As somebody who does search engine optimization as my day job, it's all the rage. All anybody can talk about is what generative AI or search generative experience is what Google is calling it. The only reason I say that is it's like having chatbot or like ChatGPT in your browser. So for instance, I went in and I typed Michigan tree planting program and it right now it's all in beta. So Google gives you a little button that says, you know, click this to see a generative experience. And the little ChatGPT thing, like the amount of information it's giving me in mid-Michigan. This is just for you, Shane. Min Michigan, here are the local chapters that you can call. It's given me Releaf Michigan, the Michigan Botanical Club, MI Trees, the 10,000 Trees Initiative in Ann Arbor, the Urban and Community Forestry Program with the State of Michigan Forestry Department, and then a program in Royal Oak, Michigan that offers free easement tree planting in front of homes, the Michigan Forestry Assistance Program, FAP, which provides technical assistance to private landowners so they can bring people out to assess your forest. And there are companies, or not companies, there are departments in the state of Michigan that offer grants for education, that offer grants for tree planting. So if your guild decides we want to plant some trees, you can contact the state of Michigan. They will give you money to go buy the trees to then go plant. So certainly there's some fundraising that can be done, but there's also several programs. And this all just came out of the generative search. Granted, without that turned on, you're still going to get some of these results, but they're going to be mixed in with, you're going to have to dig a little bit further. So there's your little pro tip for the day. Enable the SGE plugin on Google Chrome and you'll get cool things. But like at the bottom of this, there you can continue a conversation to say, like, what month do you plant trees in Michigan? And you can click through to that and figure out, okay, well, we don't want to plan this for the dead of summer. Really, we want to be planting this like in the colder months. So that might immediately disqualify some of your guild members. Or like, I am not going out in the middle of January into some forest and planting trees.
Oh, like then again, in Michigan, we got a broad range for those cold months, though. So
that's true. Yeah. And I'm told that Michiganders are a little bit hardier stock. So maybe they're like, yeah, bring it. Let's go. But I think some of the grant programs would be particularly interesting. Basically, there's money there. They're just looking for people. They're looking for the manpower to go out and plant these trees. They're looking for people to go out and clean up state parks. And actually most of the state parks have some sort of volunteer like forest cleanup or trail cleanup type program. And that usually is kind of a lot of fun for the wood nerds out there because you're there with a forester and you've got them like their undivided attention for a day while you're cleaning up and you can really kind of tap their brain a little bit. What I think could be interesting for your group in particular, and this will go back to the episode that I did with Cambium Carbon quite some time ago. The circular economy idea and this idea of urban forestry, trees that would normally be destined for a landfill or destined for a wood tripper that are now being turned into boards. And then taking the money gained from not chipping those logs, turning them into boards and planting trees, but not just planting any tree, but planting in accordance with an urban silvicultural plan, an urban concession plan, if you will. Mm-hmm. It would be interesting to hook your members with band mills and your members who don't have band mills, who are just willing to go and help, you know, go move logs around. This is hard, tiring work. And I have very little experience working with a band or with a wood miser. And honestly, what I've like at my day job, I think we've sawn a grand total of 4 logs on our wood miser. Mostly we use it to resaw already like big, heavy, thick boards. We're not really sawing logs at this point. But regardless, even with all the heavy lifting machinery that we have at a commercial yard, it is backbreaking work. So you may have, you know, 4 or 5 members that own a bandsaw mill or own an Alaskan mill, they would love to have 4 or 5 other members show up and help them.
Sure.
And this could be, you know, sawing parties. But you could hook that resource, that sawing resource, into some of these urban silvicultural type people who are taking trees down. A, it could be a source for logs, but it also could be an opportunity to give back. You know, if you end up selling those boards or your guild ends up using those boards to make toys and you sell those proceeds could go right back to help that urban forester plant trees. And that's something that could be tracked. That's something that you could actually track over the years because we are talking a long cycle here.
Yeah.
You know, you cut this tree into boards, it's got to dry. Who knows how long it's going to be before you build stuff. But if your guild is your philanthropic efforts, your toy building, let's just stick with one. The toys you're building are exclusively being built with the woods that your guild has sawn. How cool is that? Like that's something that you could actually strive towards, you know, and when you put it into like, you know, your meeting minutes and your kind of mission statement, you know, the mission statement for the Mid-Michigan Woodworkers Guild is to be fully sustainable. Mm. Like, certainly somebody's going to go to a lumberyard somewhere. But for the most part, we are able to supply the wood for at least the sanctioned guild projects.
Sure.
From material that our guild has sawn, from the material that our guild, not only have we sawn it, but we replanted the trees at the same time. That's a pretty cool thing. That's something to really strive for.
Yeah, it's
I'm excited about that. Do that.
Well, come join the Mid-Michigan Woodworkers Guild here in Lansing, Michigan, and they'll happily have you.
There you go. But I mean, my goodness, you could hook up with the Boy Scouts,
sure.
all the Eagle Scouts looking to put together programs like this, and essentially they could do a lot of the heavy lifting, like as far as the like putting together the tracking plan and building the fancy little posters that show it all and everything for their Eagle certification.
Classification. I can't remember the name, but I know I should know that.
Right. But then it also could be something where taking that data and sharing it back with the state of Michigan, you know, there could be some interesting things that comes from this, which leads me to my next point in this campaign. Like, just your little microcosm, your guild is sustainable. Your guild is building a legacy because we're using what we harvest. We're replanting what we harvest. We're keyed into that kind of circular economy. So now let's take what we've learned in our tiny little microcosm, and how do we hook more people into that? How do we grow our microcosm into a macrocosm? How do we build a coalition of sawyers, foresters, tree removal companies to build kind of a marketplace of sorts? And this is what I talked with Cambium Carbon. And Cambium Carbon is trying to do this. They have software that makes it a little bit easier as a sawmill owner to build an inventory and make your inventory visible. And Cambium Carbon, as the nonprofit, is trying to connect architects and people who want to use wood with people who are sawing wood. But that's tough to do on a national basis like they're doing right now. I think starting at a grassroots level and saying, okay, we have these either members that have band mills, or we know people, actual commercial, you know, this is their job, and several of our members have used them or are continuing to use them. We can now hook those people into users of wood, and we could start to build like a resource of sorts. That's a long-term goal, but you want to talk about legacy?
Sure.
With the amount of sawyers, and a good example, here's another thing with your ChatGPT-enabled Google browser you can do is, how do I find a sawyer in Michigan? Oh my God, the number of results I got for this. But one of the typical things is, you know, go to Woodmiser, go to the Lucas Mill people. But Woodmiser in particular has a huge directory of owners. I plugged in Michigan and it was enormous. It was like 4 pages of commercial, not just like Joe Woodworking Guild member who has a Woodmiser. You know, these are guys with like rolling tire wood misers that cost $8,000, $12,000, $20,000, pages and pages and pages of them. And this, again, this is the forestry that is very much a major industry in the state of Michigan. We could, if you could somehow start to connect the dots with those guys sawing stuff into what kind of inventory they have to people who are actually using it. And certainly woodworkers, hobby woodworkers, but then also professional woodworkers and contractors and designers. If you could build that type of resource just within mid-Michigan, what a legacy that would leave. And that would truly track that circular economy. Now, this is ambitious. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. This is a lot. But again, if you look at this as a step-by-step thing, wow, like that's your eventual goal. And all of the education that you started with, all the education outreach that you've kind of spread that knowledge down to, you know, the physical action of planting trees, the physical action of rescuing, salvaging, if you will, the logs that were destined and turning them into boards, down to building stuff out of it, raising money from it, and giving it back to plant more trees. All of that is a cumulative effect that you're going to pick up contacts along the way. You're going to meet people at the state level. You're going to meet people in education. You're going to meet people who own sawmills, meet people within tree planting organizations. You're going to start to be able to connect that dot to build this type of organization. And what ends up happening is it might actually just get handed over to somebody else. There's probably a nonprofit that's out there already that's already thinking the same thing.
Sure.
And what you end up doing is help jumpstart it and kind of give them some grassroots intel, if you will. So that's my campaign. That's what I would think, knowing that this is probably a decade-long process to do it right. So, you know, what are we signing up for? But, you know, you want to talk about a kind of an adrenaline shot to your guild. Here's where we're going to start, and here's how we're going to attract new members going forward. I think that would be something really cool, especially when you start talking to kids about, you know, getting into woodworking and join the guild. Here's kind of our overall arching mission. Here's what we're trying to do. That's really powerful. That's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I really appreciate all your thoughts. Sometimes I get caught up in the minutia of, you know, the day to day for the guild, or the month to month, if you want to put it that way. So it's really nice to get an outside perspective. I really appreciate this.
Well, I think the good news is as the president of the guild, all you have to do is just get people excited about it. This is a committee member. Like, someone else does this. You just have to bring it up at the meetings and say, okay, where are we on this? Okay, Joe, take it over. See, that's the good part about being the president in that respect. But yeah, I mean, ultimately you need to gauge the interest. People are really excited about it, I think they're going to start to take charge. And I think just getting some of these events planned where, you know, it can just be fun. I mean, like you talked about with Zoom meetings or getting together in people's shops, that's just fun. You know, you're getting around and doing some woodworking, and it's camaraderie, and woodworking is often a very solitary pursuit. So getting us physically together and talking shop and building stuff, or just talking shop and planting trees, you know, just getting outside and that could be a real community building effort that could get people pretty excited about it. And I think the snowball effect will happen from there. You know, there's other things that you can look at. I certainly think setting up kind of educational sessions with local forest organizations. And again, I keep mentioning Hartwick Pines because I've been there and I know that they have a lot there. But like, just look at, here we go. We're digging in to DeWitt, Michigan on the map, and we're looking for green areas. And we've got, where is it? Rose something State Forest. I just found it on the map and now I lost it. There's a bunch of different parks and state forests and nature preserves all within the ground. I mean, I know your guild happens to meet in DeWitt, so we're picking on just this particular municipality. If you click through to these, there is a department that manages these nature preserves just within the city limits of DeWitt. So if you want to get real grassroots and start with just right there, the Paget Park Natural Area, it's a DeWitt charter zone. There's also a dog park there. Good to know. I can't find it now. There is something Rose something State Forest that I missed. It was up somewhere else. But anyway, you know, it could get daunting, in other words, very, very quickly. So you could start really local, and start to say, you know, how could we, who's in charge of these particular, you know, nature areas, these particular open space, and is there an education session that we can set up with just our local municipality? Is there an opportunity for us to volunteer from a conservationist perspective, a trail cleanup, a tree planting, or something like that? Start real, real local. And you know, maybe DeWitt's maybe not a good example. I've never been there. You know, it's like, there may not be anything going on, but there's gotta be, you know, the greater Lansing area.
There's plenty of opportunity, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, head over to Frankenmuth and get some German beer while you're there. That I can speak to. So yeah, I think that it could get daunting really quickly. And the minute it starts to get daunting, pull your lens in, zoom in a little bit more, and look at just your local area. What resources do you, just your local guild, have? And how can you utilize those for the greatest impact? And I think the greatest impact will be hyper-local. You know, if you look at the state of Michigan, you'll think, oh man, this is a drop in the bucket. But what can we do in and around the greater Lansing area to the point where, you know, maybe one day when you have one of your summertime meetings and it's nice weather outside, you meet underneath the tree that you guys planted 20 years ago. Like, how cool is that? Now we're talking legacy at that point. And 40 years from now, you'll meet around that tree and you'll cut it down and plant another one on top of it. I mean, let's be real. Like, you know, eventually that tree is probably going to need to come down. So,
and enjoy every step of that process.
Right? Yeah. You know, and then you've got the photographs that show, here's when the guild met in May of, you know, 2030 under this tree. And, you know, that type of thing, that's the legacy that we're talking about. And even if that legacy never extends beyond the greater Lansing area, who cares? You know,
exactly. I mean,
that's such a cool story to tell. And I think so much more impactful because you can literally point to the trees that you planted. You can take shade under that tree that you planted. You can look at this box that you built and say it came from a tree that was growing on the corner of First and, you know, Park. And that's just, that's the cool stuff, I think. And eventually another guild will catch on. You know, one of the guys in the UP guild is going to do this and they're going to start doing their own thing because they saw, hey, look what the Mid-Michigan guild did. And somebody in Detroit's going to try something. I don't know. Are there trees? There are trees in Detroit, right?
Oh yeah. There's a lot of, I mean, you can find a sawmill anywhere. There's some there too.
All the Detroit people are going to write in. How dare you? Hey man, I live close enough to Baltimore. There are no trees in Baltimore. So
okay.
Speaking from personal experience, they're tiny little trees. They need to be more trees. But yeah, I think, there's the takeaway from this is the minute it gets daunting, zoom in and focus local as much as possible. And I think not only will that make it less daunting, I think it will make it more rewarding for you in the long run.
Absolutely. And I'm going to just take this as an opportunity. If there happens to be one of your, you know, listeners that lives near me, reach out to us. Yeah. Go to our webpage at mmwg.org. And that goes for people who might be interested in our guild as well, or if someone has an idea that they want to run with. So that'd be great.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that, because that's ultimately it's one of the reasons I really wanted to get you on, because you're not some big commercial entity or some state, you know, employee.
No, I'm just another woodworker. like
there you go. You know, even better. And this is where I think it starts. And this is where I not struggle, but I get frustrated because I live in both worlds. I am a weekend warrior woodworker. I am a hobbyist, but I also happen to work for the oldest lumber company in the country. So it's like, you know, on one side of the coin, you're thinking globally or at least nationally. And on the other side of the coin is like, how do I, you know, make a difference as a guy with a, you know, single car garage shop. And frankly, when that happens, when you start thinking in terms of me, an individual, that's the exciting part. Mm-hmm. Definitely folks. And you know what, let's extend this out. If there are other guilds out there that are thinking about doing this and have questions, write in, you know, I'd love to hear. And if there are guilds out there who have done this, Shane wants your advice.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, so call in, write in, send me an email, lumberupdate@gmail.com, or post something on Facebook and tag me. That worked for Shane. you know, and if you have success, be warned, I'm probably gonna ask you to come on the show and we're gonna share what you've done. Cause this is how it's gonna start. This is how we're going to change the industry. And this is what I've been harping on about for 2-3 years now, is this is the future of the lumber industry. And it's not enormous sawmills that can be seen from space. They're not gonna go away. They're still gonna be there. But it's the guy with the wood miser, the guy with the Alaskan mill that's repurposing a tree that was taken down and turning it into lumber and going back to that kind of village sawmill type thing. That I think is where we're going. And that's what designers and architects are excited about. I talk to them daily. And yeah, it's nice, you know, they'll call us and it's nice that we have, you know, 7 million board feet on the yard. But what they're always interested in is the stuff that we don't have, you know, because they want that fancy thing that grew on the street corner.
Sure.
That's where that's heading. And yeah, they're going to get a board, you know, a log for the feature wall, and then they're going to go and buy 25,000 board feet for the rest of this project. That's why both can exist. This is not an either or. This is not an adversarial thing. This is just building out the capabilities and better using our forest, better using our resource.
Everybody wins.
Yeah.
That's what we're looking to do.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So there is no group too small to do this. So, Shane, should we go ahead and schedule you for 10 years from now?
I'll have to check my schedule, but that should be all right.
Yeah. check how the end of February and 2034 looks. We'll put it on the schedule and we'll get you back on the show. So I'm going to hold you to it.
All right. That sounds great.
Well, I really appreciate it. Anything else? Anything else we didn't cover? Any questions that you might have before I let you go?
I'm sure I've got them. I'm just still processing everything because there's a lot there and, daydreaming in the middle of all your talks of what could be. So there's just a lot to process and I look forward to seeing what turns out of this.
Yeah. And for those of the people that write in from time to time and say, you really need to let your guests talk more, Shane explicitly told me that he hoped I would do most of the talking.
It's true.
Before we recorded.
I should have started with that I was leaning on that. I am glad to be the guinea pig to get other people started. So I certainly can talk with the best of them, but I was happy to sit back on this one.
Sure. Well, my challenge to you, Shane, will be... keep me informed. And if necessary, if you've got a milestone or something that you did, I'm going to mention it on the show. So stay in touch and let me know what you've done and how it's worked out. And if nothing else, we can have every couple of months, the Mid-Michigan Woodworkers Corner. What have they done now?
Do we get a theme song?
Ooh, we'll work on that. I'll have AI create it. It won't be no problem.
I got to be careful what I say here, I guess, nowadays.
Right. Yeah. Right. Well, again, I really appreciate your time. I'm excited that you were already thinking this. And I hopefully, I've given you some things to think about, not too much to think about.
This is great. No, thank you very much for your time and your thoughts.
Yeah, it's absolutely my pleasure. So, they're mmwg.org, folks. If you missed it before, check them out and definitely keep an eye on this guild because I expect them to set the world on fire.
Well, strategically.
Bad. Yeah. Right. Controlled fires.